Verse 18. The woman which thou sawest is that great city. So she's a city. Some people say, yeah, that's New York. Or some people say, it's got to be America. It's like Sodom and Gomorrah. It surely is. But it isn't America. It's a city. You can't get away from it. It's a city. Now he's not speaking symbolically. He's explaining the symbols. He's telling you who the woman is. She's a city. She's a city that rules over the kings of the earth. What city rules over the kings of the earth? Not Washington, D.C. Not Moscow. I think there's only one city. It certainly ruled during the days of the original Roman Empire. It's going to rule during the days of the revived Roman Empire. It's the headquarters, the Vatican, but it's not just the Vatican. It's all the world's religions gathered together under this head. You know, I have all kinds of documentation. Here's a city. Here's a picture. This is Margaret Melody, His Holiness Pope John Paul II, Dr. Thomas Melody. He's our ambassador. At this time he was. This is Columbia, the magazine of the Knights of Columbus. An ambassador, the ambassador is saying, for us in the world today, the key word, and you notice she is wearing black, he's wearing black, the Pope alone can wear white. For us in the world today, the key word is opportunity. And it is certainly marvelous that at this time, when significant change is possible, John Paul II is at the high point of respect as a world leader, advocating a moral and ethical point of view, and that our government is cooperating as one government to another government, the government of the Holy See. It is a great honor for me to be there representing our government to the Holy See. There's only one city in the world that has representation, representatives from all of the governments of the world. Well, all of the major ones. Only one. Here is Gorbachev and the Pope. By the way, when you read Sanctuary of the Chosen, it's a novel, but it's all very factual. Gorbachev, as you know, has a syndicated column, New York Times and so forth. And here's one of his columns that he wrote. He said, Pope John Paul II played a major political role in the collapse of communism in Eastern Europe. The events in Eastern Europe might not have been possible without the presence of this Pope, without the great role, including political, which he knew how to play on the world scene. The role of the Pope in the creation of that which later would be called the new political thought. It goes on and talks about the meeting here at the Vatican, and at that Vatican meeting, the Pope blessed Gorbachev's domestic reform programs and so forth. Well, his reform programs went by the boards. Somebody else took over. There is no more powerful man on the face of the earth than John Paul II. Everybody goes there. From Arafat to everybody else. Remember, I showed you this before, Time, Holy Alliance, Reagan, and John Paul II, the major article. This is, if you want to look it up, it's very fascinating. February 24th, 1992, how they brought down communism and the role that Solidarity played, which is a Catholic organization, the role that the priests played, the role that the Catholic Church played in bringing down the wall, bringing down communism. Somebody has tremendous power. I don't think there's a man who has the power and the influence of a man who represents a city that has influence over kings. And you know, throughout the Middle Ages, you know that emperors trembled when the Pope threatened excommunication. You know that the Pope set up emperors. You know that it was Christmas, 800 AD, at Christmas Mass in St. Peter's, when the Pope, at that time, Leo the Third, I believe he was, who had had his eyes torn out by a mob that was so angry with what he had done, the inhumanity, and he groped his way to Charlemagne, and he crowned him emperor. They had power. They executed power. John, you notice, is astonished. Verse 6 says, when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Why would he wonder with great admiration? We quoted Jesus, John 15. He said, if you were of the world would love its own, but because you're not of the world, but I've chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. The servant isn't greater than his Lord. They persecuted me. What do you think they're going to do to you? What did Jesus offer his disciples? Persecution, hatred, death. Not to rule over the world. And John sees this vision that this little flock of persecuted martyrs who've been killed suddenly has metamorphosed into this huge international institution that has this power and domain. And he's staggered by it. He's staggered by the wealth. But it's a city. It rules over the kings of the earth. It's a city on seven hills. Verse 9. Well, you say Rio de Janeiro is on seven hills. Well, there's some others, not just Rome, but there are other places that claim to be built on seven hills. Yeah, but they don't meet the other criteria. Rio de Janeiro doesn't rule over the kings of the earth. Rio de Janeiro doesn't have that power, ambassadors to it. But it says it has committed fornication with the kings of this earth. Why would God say that a city has committed fornication? That's a spiritual term. He indicted Israel for committing fornication, for adultery, spiritual adultery. Paul said, I have espoused you unto Christ as a chaste virgin, he said to the church at Corinth. I'm afraid that Satan will bewitch you and you'll go after a false Christ. This is a city that is spiritual, that claims to be in a relationship with Christ, and that has violated that by getting in bed with the kings of the world and becoming the friend of the world. Let me just try to find a couple of quotes here from Will Durant. First of all, if I can, and let me look at my notes somewhere. I have this written down. I was going to make sure I could find it. Will Durant, in his History of the Civilization of the World, says, quote, when Christianity conquered Rome, the ecclesiastical structure of the pagan church, the title investments of the Pontifex Maximus, the worship of the Great Mother and a multitude of comforting divinities, the sense of supersensible presences everywhere, the joyous solemnity of old festivals, the pageantry of immemorial ceremony, passed like maternal blood into the new religion, and captive Rome captured her conqueror. While Christianity converted the world converted Christianity. I'm quoting the great theologian, Catholic theologian, Cardinal Newman, and he says, Constantine, in order to recommend the new religion to the heathen, transferred into it the outward ornaments to which they had been accustomed in their own. And he goes on and he names the vestments and the incense and so forth. Let me just give you another quote from Will Durant again. And he's neither a Catholic nor a Christian, certainly not a Protestant. He's just simply recording. Speaking of what happened under Constantine, he said, paganism survived in the form of ancient rites and customs condoned or accepted and transformed by an often indulgent church, and intimate and trustful worship of saints replaced the cult of pagan gods. Statues of Isis and Horus were renamed Mary and Jesus. The Roman Lupercalion, the feast of purification of Isis, became the feast of the Nativity. The Saturnalia were replaced by Christmas celebration, an ancient festival of the dead by All Souls Day, rededicated to Christian heroes. Incense, lights, flowers, processions, vestments, hymns, which had pleased the people in older cults, were domesticated and cleansed in the ritual of the church. Soon people and priests would use the sign of the cross as a magic incantation to expel or drive away demons. I read to you last night what Augustine himself said. The man who enters a 4th century church is bound to see drunkards, misers, tricksters, gamblers, adulterers, fornicators, people wearing amulets, assiduous clients of sorcerers and astrologers. That was the result of what happened. They were no longer martyred. Now, to get anywhere, even in the military, in politics, in society, you had to be a Christian. And the church was flooded with people who didn't know Christ. And the church married the world. And it committed fornication with the kings of the earth. It came into a partnership with them. It began working for a worldly kingdom. And ever since, go to Europe, read your history from the Middle Ages, they were always looking for the revival of the Roman Empire. when the popes had the power alongside of the emperor and they ruled together. It's coming. It's going to be revived. Under 10 heads, but a woman will ride the beast. The Antichrist claims to be Christ, then his followers are Christians, and that's why we have to have an apostasy, we have to have an ecumenical movement, we have to have a Christianity, quote-unquote, that embraces all religions that all religions will embrace. Sisters of Joseph host Buddhist ceremony. And it goes on, it talks about the Buddhist monks and so forth. Buddhist Roman Catholic dialogue in Los Angeles, this is out of the Catholic World, a magazine that you might find interesting to read. Another article in here, the title of it is, quote, Buddha revered as a Christian saint. They had a complete issue on the New Age. Nothing wrong with the New Age. It's, this is Spirituality of a Catholic Educator, a Catholic publication, Inner Peace for the Inner City. Sisters Virgilia Jim, OSF, and Claire Lange, OSU. It's called The Energetics for Living, a Curriculum Enhancement, and Get Inside through Meditation, Eastern Meditation Techniques, and Get in Touch with the Center of Peace Within through the Practice of Meditation, Channel Positive Energy, etc., etc. It's all about Eastern mystical techniques for bringing peace to the world. It's a church that has gotten involved in that sort of thing. It's a city. It rules over the kings of the earth. It's committed fornication. It's gotten in bed with the world. No longer pure and true to Christ. It's drunk with the blood of the saints, with the blood of the martyrs. I don't want to offend our Catholic friends who are here tonight, but it happened. About 1 million in Europe burned at the stake. If you wonder why they were burned at the stake, a horrible death, because the church did not have the power to shed blood. A letter from a friend of mine, I was down there, where 20,000 Indian evangelicals have been thrown out. This is in Chiapas, Mexico. Doesn't get into the newspapers. Thrown out of their village, lost their homes, burnt. A letter that just came to me a month ago. Dear Dave, I'm sorry it's taken me so long to write to you again. I'm still here in Chiapas. It's been difficult lately. On the 17th of February, our brothers were attacked by a mob of Catholics at around 10 p.m. They beat them and burned down their houses. They also entered the homes of each brother and hauled outside all of their belongings. They put it all into a big pile. Then he goes on and he tells about another. They attacked the evangelicals the 1st of April. While they were at it, they thought they might as well do some raping and vandalism. What they didn't break, they stole. I could see the massacre from my house with binoculars. The Inquisition is alive and well here in Chiapas and so forth. This has happened. Yes, Protestants have killed Protestants and have killed Catholics, but not in the numbers. Read your history. 1 million burned at the stake in Europe alone. But it's a woman that rides the beast. I find that most fascinating. Fulton J. Sheen wrote a very interesting book back in 1952. I would say he had some amazing insights. And listen to what he said. It is our firm belief that the fears some entertain concerning the Muslims, because when you start talking about an ecumenical movement and the whole world being united, all the religions of the world, well, the New Agers, of course, they'll accept anything. The Hindus, sure, they'll embrace most anything. But what about the Muslims? Here's quite an insight. It is our firm belief that the fears some entertain concerning the Muslims are not to be realized, but that Islam will eventually be converted to Christianity, and in a way that even some of our missionaries never suspect. It is our belief that this will happen not through the direct teaching of Christianity, but through a summoning of the Muslims to a veneration of the Mother of God. And I read you from Vatican II where they said Islam worships the same God as we do. Allah is not the God that we worship. But through a summoning of the Muslims to a veneration of the Mother of God. This is the line of the argument. The Quran, which is the Bible of the Muslims, has many passages concerning the Blessed Virgin. First of all, the Quran believes in her immaculate conception and also in her virgin birth. Mary is, for the Muslims, the true Sayyida, or Lady. The only possible serious rival to her, this is Fulton J. Sheen from his book I'm reading, The only possible serious rival to her in their creed would be Fatima, the daughter of Muhammad himself. But after the death of, that was his favorite daughter, Our Lady of Fatima. You know why that town is named Fatima? Because the Muslims, as you know, were in control. And they were taking over Europe. It was the Battle of Tours in 732 AD where they returned back. And they named that city in Portugal Fatima after Muhammad's favorite daughter. And he says, but after the death of Fatima, Muhammad wrote, thou shalt be the most blessed of all women in paradise after Mary. Here's, I can find it here somewhere, the Fatima Crusader. Well, I'm not suggesting this is official Catholic dogma, but you have an awful lot of priests and about 20 million people involved. But the point I want to make is, in this particular issue, they're saying, they're talking about taking the image of Our Lady of Fatima through Muslim territories in India and in Africa. And in Bombay, they say, the press, that's the secular press, estimated 500,000 people came in 2 days to honor Our Lady. Muslims are coming to bow down to the image of Our Lady of Fatima. Medjugorje, the appearances. Franciscan University of Steubenville taking people to Medjugorje. I just have newspaper clippings here by the dozens, which we don't have time for. Life magazine, do you believe in miracles? Here's Mary, all about Medjugorje and so forth. But Fatima, Our Lady of Fatima, why does she come into this so importantly? Because, you know, in 1981, as the Pope was moving through the crowd, he saw a little girl with a pendant with a picture of Our Lady of Fatima around her neck. He bent over to bless her, and the first two bullets from the Turkish would-be assassin's rifle passed through the space where his head had just been. He got him in the body. During his convalescence, the Pope realized that the assassination attempt had taken place May 13th, 1981, the anniversary of the first appearance of Our Lady of Fatima, May 13th, 1917. And during his convalescence, she appeared to him and told him that she had saved his life because she had a mission for him and that she was going to give the world a sign that would cause the entire world to bow to his spiritual authority. Gorbachev, by the way, had already bowed to his spiritual authority. After he had that 10-minute conversation in Russian, because they're both Slavs, no interpreters present, we don't know what passed between them, and he came out and he had his first meeting with the Pope. He introduced the Pope to his wife, Raisa. He introduced the Pope as the world's highest spiritual authority. Billy Graham is talking of him as the greatest spiritual and moral leader of the century. James Dobson has used similar language in his Focus on the Family Citizen magazine. A powerful man, but a man who has embroidered in all of his robes in Latin, totus tuus sum, Maria, Mary, I am all yours, and who is totally dedicated to Our Lady of Fatima. Here's an article from New York Times. 10 years later, interest resurfaces in Pope shooting. In the Portuguese town of Fatima on Monday, Pope John Paul II placed a crown of diamonds upon the head of a statue of the Virgin Mary, who he believes saved his life in an assassination attempt exactly 10 years ago. It's a crown of diamonds. Set in the crown was one of the three bullets fired into him by Turkish gunman Mehmet Ali Agca. Here's a Time magazine, December 30th, 1991. The Pope at Fatima on the 10th anniversary of his shooting, bowing before the statue, thanking Mary for sparing his life, and so forth. This woman is going to play an important role. Catholics are saying, we have something that nobody else has. In these days of an awakening goddess worship, an awakening sense of women's rights, we have a woman. We have a woman leading. And she is the secret to capturing not just the Muslims, but the world. Not only that, but she is the one who brought the wall down. She made the promise at Fatima. Here was a Catholic priest Joseph Terelia, who spent 20 years in Soviet prisons because of his Catholicism. You have to give the man credit for that. It was released after request by the Pope, Amnesty International, and others. Will tell his story at 7:30 p.m. Thursday at St. Cecilia Roman Catholic Church, and he will discuss the appearance of the Virgin Mary in the Soviet Union shortly before the destruction of the Berlin Wall. She promised to bring peace to the world. She promised to convert the world if the popes would dedicate the world to her Immaculate Heart in reparation for the sins of the world committed against her. I quoted some of the things that Our Lady of Fatima said last night. I will never leave you nor forsake you, you remember? Only God can do that. She's not omnipresent. She promised to save the world. She said that many souls perish and go to hell because there's no one to make sacrifice for them, make sacrifices for sins. I'm just quoting Lucia, if Lucia isn't lying. She says this is what Mary said. That's not the Mary of the Bible. That's a delusion. But it's the Mary, you might say, of the Catholic Bible. Here's the Holy Bible, edited by Reverend John P. O'Connell. I read you some excerpts out of it before, indulgences for reading the Bible and so forth. Here is the translation of Genesis 3, verse 15. Genesis 3, verse 15 is the first promise of the Messiah. I will put enmity between the woman and your seed, and the serpent. I'll put enmity between the woman and the serpent, and the serpent will bruise his heel, and he, or in some translations, it, the Messiah, the seed of the woman, will bruise the serpent's head. In the Catholic Bible it says, I will put enmities between thee and the woman, and thy seed and her seed. She shall crush thy head, and thou shalt lie in wait for her heel. You know the image of the medal, Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal, is depicted with her on the serpent crushing his head. No, that's what the Messiah is supposed to do. Remember I read you the Holy Father's prayer for the Marian year? It ends like this. Sustain us, O Virgin Mary, on our journey of faith, and obtain for us the grace of eternal salvation. I read you, or quoted to you, out of devotions in honor of our Mother of Perpetual Help. Thou art the dispenser of all the goods which God grants to us. Miserable sinners, come then to my aid, dearest Mother, in thy hands. I place my eternal salvation, and to thee do I entrust my soul. For if thou protect me, dear Mother, I fear nothing, not from my sins, because thou wilt obtain for me the pardon of them, nor from the devils, because thou art more powerful than all hell together, nor even from Jesus, my judge, himself, because by one prayer from thee he will be appeased. The apparition that appears says, I'm holding back my son. He's going to bring judgment upon this world. By one prayer from thee he will be appeased. But one thing I fear, that in the hour of temptation I may neglect to call on thee and thus perish miserably. Obtain for me then the pardon of my sins. Jesus obtained pardon for our sins. He offers that pardon to whosoever will accept his death as the sacrifice for their sins. It's in agreement with Vatican II. I'm reading from volume 1, page 418. She conceived, brought forth, and nourished Christ. She presented him to the Father in the temple. She shared her son's sufferings as he died on the cross. Thus, in a holy singular way, she cooperated by her obedience, faith, hope, and burning charity in the work of her Savior in restoring supernatural life. Taken up to heaven, she did not lay aside this saving office, but by her manifold intercession continues to bring us the gifts of eternal salvation. We don't need Mary for the gifts of eternal salvation. They have given her a position, you can't escape it, that the real Mary never took, and which she does not deserve, which God has not given her. But this woman has been exalted so that you might say it's not surprising that this system of religion is seen as a woman, because this is the most prominent part. Here's a new shrine being built next to Disneyland. Mary, Queen of the Universe Shrine, down in Orlando, with a map, how to get to it, and so forth. This is the Glories of Mary by St. Alphonsus de Liguori. Table of contents. Mary is the hope of all. page 109. Mary is the hope of sinners, page 118. Mary is our help. Mary our mediatress. Mary our advocate. Mary our guardian. Mary our salvation. Mary delivers her clients from hell. Mary succors her clients in purgatory. Mary leads her servants to heaven. Let me just read some excerpts. And by the way, this is not the writing of Cardinal Liguori. He has gathered together the writings of the great leaders of the Catholic Church down through the ages, and he's quoting them. If my Redeemer rejects me on account of my sins and drives me from his sacred feet, I will cast myself at those of his beloved Mother Mary, and there I will remain prostrate until she has obtained my forgiveness. And I will say, we are thy servants, and in thee we place our confidence. A prayer. O Mother of Holy Love, our life, our refuge, our hope, God has decreed that thy prayers should aid our salvation, and he has made them so efficacious that they obtain all that they ask. These are the words recorded, spoken to Mary by one of the great saints of the church. Save us, we perish. As does a certain author already noticed who says, we cannot ask Mary to save us. This belongs to God alone. Now he reasons, but since a culprit condemned to death can beg a royal favorite to save him by interceding with the king that his life may be spared, why cannot we ask the Mother of God to save us by obtaining us eternal life? But Christ obtained eternal life. The Holy Church approves of the invocation by calling her the salvation of the weak. Saint Germanus has said, speaking of Mary, no one is saved but through thee. Go to Mary, says Saint Bernard. Our salvation is in thy hands. I'm sorry, I'm running late. But it's filled with statements that our salvation comes only through Mary, that God has decreed, yes, Christ is the means of salvation. But Mary suffered. She suffered on the cross. In fact, some of the saints say there were two altars there. One where Christ offered himself, the other where Mary offered herself. No, there was only one, for she was on the cross with him as well. And he suffered with the pains of his body, she with the sorrow of her heart, so she may truly be called co-redemptrix. Pope Pius XII said, Mary is indeed worthy to receive honor and glory and might. She is exalted to high static union with the Blessed Trinity. Pope Leo XIII said, as no man can come to the Father except through the Son, so generally no one can come to Christ except through Mary. Pope Benedict XV said, she, Mary, suffered so much for us that we may rightfully say that she has with Christ redeemed the human race. I have much more, but I'm going to try to bring it to a halt. A woman has gained prominence over a religious system that is worldwide, that embraces all religions, that has tremendous authority over the kings of the earth, that exercises power no other city in the world exercises it. And this will be the uniting force to bring Buddhists, Hindus, Muslims, all religions together. When an antichrist, a false Christianity, a false Christ is ruling over the kingdoms of the earth in a revived Roman Empire with a headquarters in that great city. I'm concerned that there's an ecumenical movement. I'm concerned that there are evangelicals. One of the reasons for a seminar like this. There are evangelical leaders as well who are now joining together with Rome to evangelize the world. With what gospel? I think I've demonstrated that it's not the gospel that Paul preached. It's not the gospel of this book, but it's another gospel that says the work of Christ upon the cross, his once-for-all sacrifice, it is owned by the church. Its merits flow through the church. To it has been added the merits of Mary, the merits of the saints, and it flows through the sacraments. You can't get it all at once. You can't know that you're saved. You get it piecemeal. And John saw the picture of this, and he was absolutely staggered. I just, a year ago, or was it a year and a half, or maybe 2 years ago, we went from Jerusalem to Rome. In Jerusalem, you know, as you're looking at Jerusalem from the Mount of Olives, dominating the skyline is this huge dome of the rock, the Golden Dome, the Mosque of Omar, it's called, an Islamic shrine. It's so huge. It's so wealthy. It's so, it represents such power. And there it is on Temple Mount. We went to Rome, and I had forgotten as I walked onto St. Peter's Square, you could put many Temple Mounts in St. Peter's Square. When I walked inside St. Peter's Basilica, you could put, I'm not exaggerating, half a dozen Dome of the Rocks inside. And as you go through the wealth, you go through the Sistine Chapel, through the museum and so forth, the guide, here's a 50-pound block of solid gold molded into a landscape. And the guide says, King so-and-so gave that to Pope so-and-so. Here's a tapestry. You could pay off the national debt of the United States with the art. It's the wealth that's there. That was given to Pope so-and-so by Prince so-and-so, and on it goes. The wealth, the power, but in league with the world. And it started out as a little flock that Jesus promised only suffering, rejection, and crucifixion. And somehow the cross has become something else. You know what it was during the Crusades. We don't like to even hark back and think of that under Pope Urban II, when the Crusaders, waving the cross, left a trail of mayhem, slaughter, and plunder across Europe. And when they arrived to free the Holy City, the Holy Land, for the Church, they killed every Jew and every Arab that was in Jerusalem. The power that suddenly this church began to wield when it was a little flock, fear not, little flock, it's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. I don't think you can mistake the identity, a city on seven hills. It rules over the kings of the earth. It's been in bed, in league with the kings of the earth, and it's drunk with the blood of the martyrs. I don't gain joy or pleasure. The only reason that I would say this is to quote what John is told. He hears a voice saying, come out of her, my people, because God's judgment is coming. There'll be Protestants joined together in this, Buddhists and Hindus and so forth. Whoever we are, there is only one ark of safety, and that's Christ. There's only one means of salvation. That's the gospel of Jesus Christ. I would just ask you, do you know that you are saved? Not by your merits. In what are you trusting? You hope to get to heaven someday? How are you going to get there? I would recommend very highly, I didn't bring any, but we're offering in our newsletter. I don't think any Catholic could find any fault, would feel that it's done in an improper way. I think it's very tastefully done. It's called Roman Catholicism, A Crisis of Faith. And it examines some of the crises of faith in the Roman Catholic Church. And at one point in the video, the camera is in front of St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York, simply asking people at random, as they come out, putting the mic in front of them, how do you hope to get to heaven? Watch the video. This is not staged. These people don't have a clue. Well, my good deeds, you know, I've done a lot of good, or I've been to Mass, or I've been baptized, or whatever. St. Patrick's Cathedral, by the way, is where Cardinal Cook hosted the Dalai Lama on his first tour of the United States, where he preached, the Dalai Lama preached to an overflow crowd of over 5,000 people. And where the Dalai Lama said, all religions are basically the same, and received a standing ovation. And Cardinal Cook said, this is one of the great moves of the Spirit in our day. I can tell you, it's not a great move of the Holy Spirit. Come out of her, my people. earnestly contend for the faith. Stand for the truth, no matter what it costs. Because one day, all that will count is what Jesus will have to say.